Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And hey everyone, welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And it is December. We're here to talk about our November book club pick, IQ by Joe Ide. Apologies first off for the delay in getting this episode out. I am currently in China traveling, like I always do in December, and it's been an adventure trying to find the right internet to be able to conduct this podcast with Rira, who's back home in sunny Pasadena. Actually, it's been pretty cold back home.
It has not been sunny. It has not been sunny for the past week.
Yeah, my friends back home are saying it's like, I feel like a couple of days it's actually been colder over there than here. But then it snowed yesterday, so I think we have the lead again here in Shanghai. But I went to the bookstore district in Shanghai, which is right by the Bund, yesterday, and it was really interesting seeing all the... they have a lot of classical translations of, like, foreign literature, but not a lot of contemporary books. Like, I couldn't find Pachinko or Poppy War or anything. The books that I saw, that was... but I did see a lot of Assassin's Creed novelizations.
Wait, what?
And World of Warcraft novelizations.
Okay, like, I understand that, like, the gaming, like, the pro gaming culture there is pretty pretty intense, but really? Like,
yeah.
they don't have a Chinese translation of Pachinko. Like, it's translated everywhere.
I couldn't see it. I couldn't find it here. I don't know.
Okay.
I'll probably have better luck in Taiwan. Where the censors aren't as, you know, intense about stuff. How are your holidays going? How is the you household holiday season going?
I survived Thanksgiving. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And I am dreading the Christmas season. This is my least favorite part of the year. But you know what? That's okay, because 2018 is almost over.
Yeah, 2018 is almost like for a year that has been like pretty solid for Asian representation. It's still feels like it's been kind of a crappy year. Like, there's been some victories though, so that's good.
Yeah,
I guess let's get into it. Let's talk about our November book club pick, which is IQ by Joe Ide. This was a book published in 2016. And there's already three books in the series. I guess it's like it's super popular.
Yeah, the latest one, Wrecked, came out in October this year.
And I'll kick us off by reading the book check description. East Long Beach. The LAPD is barely keeping up with the neighborhood's high crime rate, but someone from the neighborhood has taken it upon himself to help solve cases the police can't or won't touch. Isaiah Quintabe, a high school dropout, has an unassuming nature that disguises a ferocious intelligence. Most people call him IQ. Word has gotten around. If you've got a problem, Isaiah will take care of it. His rate's adjustable to your income or lack thereof. But when cash gets tight, Isaiah is forced to take on the case of a rap mogul whose life is in danger. And IQ finds his investigation encompasses much more than he bargained for. No one expects a kid from East Long Beach to have what Isaiah's packing. A blistering intellect, an incredible sense of perception, and some serious skills behind the wheel. It all adds up to one major advantage. When you come from nothing, nobody sees you coming.
So, Marvin, what were your expectations when you were going into this book?
Well, from the book jacket description, I deducted, or deduced
Inducted. That's a whole thing in this book, but yeah, inducted.
That there was some sort of like play on Sherlock, or someone, a Sherlock-like main character, but set in the hood. I guess without knowing what the book was about, I wasn't expecting it to be like so focused on South Central. And I mean, upon reading it, like, you immediately see what he's like, the tone he's going for, and the characters that are going to play a big part of his book. You know, there were like one or two Asian characters in it, but for the most part, it was like a very African-American character-centered story, which I guess I wasn't expecting at first, but quickly got into.
Yeah, it was really surprising for me, too. I actually knew about the characters being almost exclusively Black in this novel before reading it, because I was recommended to it. I was recommended this book by a lot of friends, and they're like, oh, it's going to seem a little weird, but a Japanese-American author wrote this. And I'm like, huh, interesting. I was like, huh, interesting. Well, I'm not Black, so I can't comment on like how authentic it is, obviously, but I don't know, like the characters seemed really like tangible to me. Like yeah, like just the way they talked and just the manner of like, because this is written in an omniscient point of view, where like it's not like first person point of view, you kind of get into all of the characters' mindset. So it was just like written so well. Like the characters were shaped really well.
Yeah, and I think the way that he writes his characters' dialogue, all it felt natural. And I listened to part of it on audiobook, and having it read by a Black person definitely also added to characterizations as well.
Yeah, I actually had to do some digging because I really wanted to know like where Joe Ide got his characters from. Like what did he research? Is he from that neighborhood? Did he have to like go there and do some canvassing? It turns out that Joe Ide actually grew up in South Central Los Angeles around like the 60s and 70s. His grandparents had bought a house in that neighborhood during the Depression, and they were too poor to leave. I think one of Joe's brothers was actually part of a gang, and it seems like he had a lot of firsthand knowledge on some of like the drug deals that were happening in that neighborhood and gang violence. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. It's a big conversation right now. Like who should write what types of characters. And there's a lot of discussion from all different points of view. We've read books where Asian authors have written Black characters. The one that comes to mind is Sorcerer to the Crown, where the main character is a Black sorcerer. But that was still it was still a fish out of water type of story, where the Black person was the exception to the societal norm. I think what made this book really interesting reading, I think what made this story super interesting was that it was exclusively set in like a Black, like Black America, like the hood, with like the white characters being the exception, like the outsiders in this story.
Yeah. So like there's a New York Times interview that, New York Times did an interview with Joe Ide, and they had asked him, did he ever hesitate to write a book about almost exclusively black characters? And he said, oh, it never had occurred to me. And I'm going to say his quote right here. He said, I wanted to be black, but I knew I wasn't. I wasn't black. I wasn't white. I was way far from being Japanese. So I was a lot on the fringe, and I was a watcher. I would listen to people, listen to the way they talk, and imagine what was going on in their heads. And there you have it. He did such a good job.
Yeah.
I think he did such a good job with getting into his characters' mindsets. And oh boy, were they characters.
Yeah. I'm super also, curious.
Go right ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I'm super curious to see what like Black Book Twitter or the Black Book community thought of this book. I tried looking for reviews, but this book came out a while ago, so it was kind of hard to like scroll down on Twitter, and I couldn't really find any substantial reviews to point to. So if any of our listeners have any like input on this, I'm super curious to see what like the Black community thought about this story.
Yeah. Okay, so we can't ignore the fact that this is loosely based on Sherlock Holmes. I say very, very loosely because like there's very few common grounds between IQ and Sherlock Holmes.
One is
that they're like weird. they're weird. They're outsiders. They notice things. But aside from that, not much.
I mean, he's very much like a Sherlock in the vein of like Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock, right?
Well, the thing is, like Sherlock Holmes, he does cases voluntarily. He does it for free, not because, because he's curious, right? He has like a morbid curiosity for these types of things, and whereas with IQ, he solves crimes pretty much for free because of guilt. So I think that sets him pretty much on the opposite side of Sherlock Holmes. Whereas like Sherlock right. Holmes is a sociopath and IQ is a normal person who is trying to pay bills and happens to be really smart and be really good at figuring things out.
Yeah. The other parallel with Sherlock Holmes is I feel like the mystery itself at the center of this story is also based on one of the classic Sherlock Holmes mysteries, Hounds of Baskerville.
Yeah, the Hound of Baskervilles. Right. Yeah. that was like my first hint at like, oh, yeah, okay, shout out to Sherlock then.
but it's also an origin story too, right? Part origin story. Like one half of it is like what... like half the story takes place back in between 2003 and 2006, where the main mystery takes place in 2013. And the earlier storyline was told in between the main mystery is more of like how like kid Isaiah became Detective Isaiah. And in between when he was burglar Isaiah.
Yes.
And I think it was super interesting because Joe Ide set his story in like, South Central and like in the poor black neighborhood, and he doesn't shy away from what is like an everyday reality for poor black people in America, especially in South Central LA. It's not something that the characters fear as much as it's a part of like living where they live, and you know that's characterized the most in the Watson character, like the Watson analog in this Sherlock story,
Mr. Dotson.
Wano
get
Dotson,
it? Because
yeah.
it rhymes with Watson.
I didn't
so hilarious.
Get that.
Dodson, Watson.
No, I get it now. Who's like a doctor in the way that like he has a PhD in the School of Hard Knocks doctor. And he's more of like, he's a hustler, right? He's like always looking for his next hustle, trying to make money wherever he can to make a living.
My God, he has a quote that I really like, and he's just like, oh, like, you have to be hustling. If you're not hustling, then someone's hustling you. And I was like, wow, okay, character in a nutshell. I like him. I really like Dodson. Which is really funny because he is kind of a sidekick character. And it's very rare that I go for the sidekick in like these in kind of like these detective stories.
And he also plays that Watson role where he balances out Isaiah's flaws.
Oh, yeah. Like he is constantly trying to dig at Isaiah. Constantly trying to like make him slip up or irritate him to a point where like he will show some kind of emotion, because IQ is kind of he's very serious, and it's kind of like Dotson is trying to make him crack in a way.
Yeah, like his life's goal is to like just once like one up Isaiah.
Yeah.
I did like adult Dotson more than kid Dotson.
Well, yeah. The thing about this book is it really reminded me that young people can make really stupid mistakes. Yeah. Like, even someone like IQ, who is extremely smart, can make a pretty stupid decision, such as dropping out of school, quitting his job, go search for the driver of the hit and run that killed his brother. Like, there's like absolutely no evidence. It's like, why are you spending so much time on that? But it's the opposite of what a cold, logical detective would do. Just saying.
But also, like, for someone with his skills where he is, I feel like it's something that and I think this is where like the setting really, really sets the story apart from other, you know, crime novels, where dropping out of school because of like whatever reason, like his obsession with finding his brother's killer leads to him being strapped for money. And when you're strapped for money with like no education, it doesn't matter how smart you are, right? And it doesn't matter, like for him being so smart without an education, he couldn't really find like a high paying job. So what does he do? Like, he turns to crime to keep his brother's apartment, but also B, to, you know, satisfy his need. Like, I think he has a need to like prove how smart he is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So I really liked how, like, Isaiah was introduced as like this kind of like Robin Hood figure for his neighborhood, because he just happens to see a guy kidnap a girl, and then he goes on that crazy car chase scene, and then I'm like, oh, is this what the book is gonna be about? Is this the case? Him like trying to catch this pedophiliac, but. It turns out to be not that. That case just wrapped up, and it's a case about a rapper who almost gets assassinated by a dog. And I was like, wait, what?
Well, so I thought that, and I think this is where, because Joe Ide's background is, he was originally a screenwriter. So this is kind of like that, you know how in when you write a pilot, or like when you're like introducing
a cold character. Open. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a cold open where like, okay, so this is the tone of what this guy is. You know, it's like going back to the BBC Sherlock, like the first episode like opens with a totally unrelated case where he comes in, just solves it. Right. It's kind of like, mm-hmm. this is his character. This is his world. But yeah, the actual case being someone wanting to kill Cal, who is a rapper under the name Black Knife, right? And how I really liked how he's actually like a very confused and emotionally damaged guy hiding under a veneer of like being a hardcore rapper.
Yeah. It was quite funny that he was kind of in like a midlife crisis. And And like the fact that he was writing these really self-loathing rap songs was pretty funny. Like just reading the lyrics for them was like hilarious. I think one of my favorite scenes with him is when he's burning his possessions on the patio and being like, I'm free, I'm free. And then he looks at his stuff being burned and he's like, oh no, like my stuff, my stuff.
Well, I mean, there's also that scene at the end where he's like literally about to get himself killed because he got lured out by the assassin. And he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of comedy in this book. And I really do appreciate that. Because if it was just like a straight up noir, then I feel like it wouldn't sell. Like these characters wouldn't sell.
And I like that the mystery itself, like the actual mystery itself was like, even though it was half the story, it was pretty light. It's kind of like an action movie. Like this book was like two stories. Like one half was like detective like adventure romp, and the other half was like more of like a teen drama.
Yeah, I'm not sure which I liked more, to be honest.
I know there was actually there was like a lot of action in the mystery part of the novel. You know, there was the part where the assassin who is
Skip,
who is, you know, like cartoonishly evil, tries to hunt down Isaiah and his home, right?
Yeah, that scene was like pretty much written like a movie.
Yeah,
like you could pretty much see all the camera angles, like, oh, this is where Isaiah's back is, and this is where he's like peering into, and just like it's very cinematic the way that Joe Ide wrote that scene.
Yeah, and you know, he was saved by a chicken, which is awesome. Also, R.I.P. Chicken.
R.I.P. Chicken. Well, it's meant to be eaten, right? I think like one of his clients gave him that chicken.
Yeah, it was
to be eaten, right? Like not just like, oh, here, have a chicken as a pet. It was like, here, have a chicken and then kill it and make some chicken. Right?
It was payment for one of his cases, for sure. And then I think he just ended up raising it as a pet.
I mean, chickens are pretty much dinosaurs. They're pretty scary.
Yeah.
Sorry, we kind of went off the rails there. I'm on cold medicine, by the way. <It's okay. laughs> So if nothing makes sense, I blame it on my medicine.
I think it's, well, I mean, we've talked a lot about the actual case that he's on, which is half the book. The other half, interspersed between the chapters, are the flashback chapters where you see where Isaiah comes from. And I guess it also sets him up to be kind of a tragic character too, right? Like a young person who made a bunch of bad decisions because of a combination of his circumstance and his emotions.
Yeah, yeah. If you think about it, like, what if Isaiah, young Isaiah, got therapy after his brother had died? What if he had the financial and emotional support that so many people of privileged classes get? Like, he wouldn't have made a lot of those stupid decisions.
Yeah. And, you know, you see that through his character, the character of his older brother, Marcus, who's in the book for, like, half a chapter, right? Who sees a spark. Like he sees the spark in his brother, in Isaiah, and like basically forces him to live up to it. And even his ghost, his imagined ghost in Isaiah's head, is always like reminding him of what he could be, like his untapped potential. And yeah, like you said, like not like the system, like the world kind of fails Isaiah in that. Here is someone who obviously could be anything he wants to be, but instead is, you know, uses his genius for like not only personal gain, but like for crime, right?
Yeah. And it's like more tragic in a sense that Marcus tells him tells Isaiah that he wants him to do something good with his genius, that he has potential to actually do some good in this world. And the fact that, like, after Marcus is gone and Isaiah literally uses his talents for crime, like, yeah, that's really tragic if you think about it. I think anytime when a young character who shows potential to be something great, to be, to kind of elevate themselves from their peers, and they don't hold on to that potential, or they don't, I don't know, they don't jump for the opportunity to make something of themselves. It's sad. It's probably one of the saddest things you can see. Speaking of education, this is just like a random thought that just popped into my mind. But, there's like this one line that Marcus says to Isaiah, and he says, "Oh, you got like a 98 on your test. Well, you think those Asian kids are proud that they got a 98? No, they can go to Harvard by just breathing. You have to do better." I don't remember the exact quote, but it was like,
yeah.
It was just like really funny because I'm like, oh, this is written by a Japanese American author, and
a subtle dig at Asian parents. But yeah, going back to the origin story part of this book, like we mentioned, the mystery part of it was more like an adventure mystery crime movie. This was more like a crime story where you have someone who is obviously meant for more than a life of like hustling in the hood, right? Tragedy falls on him and he turns to crime, and it escalates to the point where like there's a tipping point, and then they have to face the consequences, right? That's like the story of like Better Luck Tomorrow or Scarface or even Goodfellas, right?
I haven't watched this film, so I can't say accurately, but the movie Dope?
Oh, yeah. Kind of.
Yeah, because like it's like a black character who is heading for like an Ivy League school, but he's like competing. Like
small hustles become bigger hustles, become actual crime.
Yeah.
Which becomes a life-threatening situation. And part of that is the character of, again, Dodson plays a huge part. Like in the future, Dodson is the sidekick. Where in the origin story part of it, Dodson is kind of like the antagonist, right? He's the one who, like, he's already a hustler, a high school hustler, and wants to figure out how to make, he sees that Isaiah is super smart and wants to find a way to hustle him, right? Mm-hmm. Make money through him. Like, he's kind of like the Quincy, and like, he's a small-time crook who thinks he's super smart. Like, he thinks he's the criminal mastermind, even though he's, like, not.
Yeah, like, the thing about the book going back and forth between past and present is, like, when you're starting out, I'm like, okay, like when Dodson hits up Isaiah for, like, hey, this is, like, a payday case. Like, you'll get your money if you do this case. I was just like, okay, it's just, like, they had a beef, but it's probably not that big. Like, in my mind, I thought it wasn't that big. But then as I kept reading, I'm just like, oh, no, Dodson was like, they did some stuff together. They did some criminal things together. How did you let this guy come back into your life? And same thing with Deronda, because in the beginning, she seems like a really funny character. And then you see her in a flashback pretty much. And I'm like, no, she was like the beginning of everything going wrong.
Yeah. She's so like the third party who like messed things up.
Like, yeah, she was like the catalyst. So it was just like, it was very interesting seeing past self and future self like side by side. Like, not only do you see Isaiah as like a teen and how he is now, but also like how Dodson has kind of matured through his criminal mistakes, I guess. Because they make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, and it's funny that he becomes kind of like he's still a hustler. Like, he's still trying to sell. Like, I love that the scene where he goes back to his old school And he pretty much sells, like, have you seen Parks and Rec?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's selling Tom Haverford's, like...
Rent-a-swag,
yeah. But, I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, I, like, totally thought rent-a-swag when I read that part. Yeah, like, I didn't expect the teen drama to go into like heists, you know?
Oh, I mean, like, if you think about it.
That's not like the first, like, quote unquote, smart crime that pops into my head.
Well,
like, I think counting cards or like, or like pyramid schemes or something, but like just like straight up heists. I mean,
they weren't straight up heists. They were like quote unquote smart heists, right? Because they were stealing things that on the surface might look like petty crime, but like behind the scenes was actually super smart, right? Where they're only stealing high value stuff. They're stealing stuff that normal people don't steal. Like instead of robbing banks or stealing jewelry, right? They're stealing pet supplies and hair extensions. Actually, now that I say it out loud, I'm not sure it was super smart, but it was still very like,
Because, like, the thing is, like, they rob these, like, high-value merchandise, and the way that they make money is by slowly selling it on eBay. And this is the reason why, like, Isaiah and Dotson, they start getting into, they start getting into arguments because Dotson really wants his money faster, because he spends his money faster. Whereas, like, Isaiah, he is trying to ration the money, and I don't know, just selling things on eBay doesn't really seem like like a good way.
I don't even think he's like rationing the money. I think he just doesn't spend it fast enough, so he doesn't see why he needs to make it that fast. And to him, because he's like the logical thinker, selling on eBay makes he's pretty much ensuring that he gets market price for it. Because Dotson could sell it faster, but he's also like
gonna get less money.
He's gonna get less money. There's a middleman, and there's more variables thrown in, right? Because part of why Isaiah wants to like do things like slowly and methodically is also because he wants to make sure that there aren't any people that could betray them.
Yeah, like Duranda, like that scene where Duranda is watching television and like the news anchor is just like, yes, we call them the whatever they were called, the ram thieves, because they have like a battering ram to break doors. And she's like, wait, are those like you guys are them, right? I'm pretty sure you guys are them. And then like she pretty much lives in that house until Isaiah leaves.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Such a bad decision. Yeah, like Dotson selling all of their merchandise in a garage sale or like a yard sale.
Yeah.
I was just like, why? now people know like where they got all this shit from. And I don't know.
Well, that was also where like again, like being a teen drama, this is where the two, like, I don't know, even know if they're friends at that point, but they now try to, like, because they're in business together, they now try to exert power over each other.
Yeah.
That eventually leads to, like, Isaiah just, like, walking away. And then Dotson.
I was gonna say it leads to them to like a full gang war in their neighborhood.
Yeah. And all of it because Dotson would not admit that like he had that chip on his shoulder, right?
I mean, he decided to like go to their not handler, but like their the dealer's boss.
Yeah.
And kind of like And kind of rob him of his money. And it's just like that's also I don't think he thought this through. No.
Well, it was Deronda's idea too, right? And she like she plants this idea in his head, and then realizing that, like, he's probably going to get himself killed, finds Isaiah to go save them.
Yeah. Well, at that point, Isaiah is just like, oh, no, like, he has the security card to, like, the storage, to the storage place. So if they catch him, they'll catch me, and everything is over.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, it was kind of out of
self-preservation. Yeah. So Isaiah ends up, you know, killing the drug dealer and his guard, and then igniting a gang war between...
Because Dodson thought it was a smart thing to do by hiding his identity by pretending to be one of the rival gangs.
Yeah, pretending to be like a Mexican, right?
Yeah.
And then that gang war erupted and innocent people died. And that's what's been weighing on Isaiah's conscience for the longest time. You don't really see Dodson wrestling with that guilt. But I guess the ending of the book, it's revealed that Dodson is also like wrestling with it.
Yeah.
Right? What did you think about how everything wrapped up? Because I kind of felt like I wrapped up a little super cleanly, but I guess that's how Sherlock stories work, is you figure it out and like it wraps up.
I mean, this isn't a Sherlock story because it's not Sherlock Holmes. Very, right. Very different characters. But for the ending, well, here's the thing. For like the mystery part of the book, like I already guessed who the person was who hired the hitman. And I was just like, okay, just like waiting for them to like, for like IQ and Dodson to like catch up. So I guess I enjoyed the teen drama more. And since that got more of like a firm conclusion, like I appreciated it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm making sense, but yeah. And I also assume that Marcus wasn't killed in a hit and run. I thought he was murdered. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, the ending, spoiler, like he finds, like Isaiah finds the car that his brother got hit with. And I'm just like, why is that there? It's probably because his brother got murdered. So, I mean, I don't know. I just made a lot of assumptions. And
well, I think that's like the plot of the second book, right?
I don't know. In the second book, I heard that there are Chinese gangs, and it's in Las Vegas. Very interesting words. Like, very interesting descriptions for... like, I can't really wrap my head around it, but then again, this book had a hit with a giant pit bull.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about Skip yet.
Oh, yeah, he's kind of like a big deal in this book. We should probably talk about him.
Well, he's like he's characterized as like a sociopath, right? But he's like, isn't he like one of the only like white dudes in the entire story?
I don't know if he's a sociopath, because if he was a sociopath, he would know how to like handle people. He would know how to act in front of people and be able to manipulate their feelings more. I think he just might be a psychopath. I'm not sure. But I just know that he's not a sociopath. Because he cannot empathize with anybody.
There was an entire chapter dedicated to his backstory, though. So you do learn a lot about his past. I don't know why he's changed his name. Because his original name was kind of badass. Like Skip isn't really a good hitman name. But Magnus... I feel like that's like, if you're going to be a hitman, you should be Magnus.
I like when I was reading about like when Skip came into the picture, the entire time I was just like, why does he have so many guns? Like, why does he have so many guns? And then it came to light that he worked at a gun store, and I was like, oh, that's why.
what did you think of like spending so much time with him?
I learned a lot about dog breeding reading this book. I was like, oh, you can do that. You can breed dogs so that they're actually bigger than their original like breed. Like that, I don't know what the science is behind that, but I'm guessing that Joe Ide did some research, and I'll call it legit for now.
I mean, you learned about dog breeding. I learned about hair extensions.
Oh, what about hair extensions?
And how like Russian ones are apparently more expensive.
Oh, you mean virgin hair? Virgin hair, as in like hair that hasn't been chemically treated.
Right.
Yeah.
What else can we talk about?
We haven't talked about the person who actually hired Skip. Bobby Grimes, the record producer.
Yeah, Bobby Grimes, who like used his driver / bodyguard to hire Skip. He was.
I mean, I guessed it from the very beginning. I'm like, oh, okay, like someone's trying to assassinate the rapper. It's probably the record producer.
See, I didn't get that because it felt like he really needed him to go record his record to make money, because he was trying to get bought out by the bigger conglomerate, right? So I actually didn't guess it. So you're better at mysteries than I am, or crime novels.
You know, like so many mysteries have a situation where like, yeah, art becomes more valuable after the artist dies. So I just figured, hey, you want to earn more money than kill the artist.
I guess. And like the characters realized that while talking about Tupac and how his records were sold more when he was dead than he was alive, which is like the perfect way for those characters to like come to that conclusion. I thought it was fun that the rapper Cal was like characterized as like an artiste type, similar to how Tupac, like I guess how the real Tupac was, where he was like super into like making sure his art was perfect, and like recorded like thousands of tracks, but only picked like the few that he deemed worthy of showcasing. Which is super like artist trope, right?
Yes. I wish I was that trope. I wish I was able to make that much work and just pick the ones that actually look good. But
no, I feel like that's the road to like Cal's like downfall, is being so like so artistic. Like part of his character that was really like endearing but also like kind of sad was like he was a very like sensitive, introverted guy who had to play his role, or else like people will like talk shit about him on the internet and tabloids.
Speaking of tabloids, I really liked his ex-wife Noelle.
Yeah, and you know, there was part of a mystery novel is like the misdirect, right? And she was there as the misdirect, her and Dotson's cousin, who were having, because they were having an affair, right? That was the
insinuation. Oh, Anthony and Noelle, yeah. They were having an affair.
So there was like a secondary conspiracy happening completely separate from the murder conspiracy. But there, you know, because it's a mystery and everything comes out, it all got jumbled together, right? So that was interesting. That was a good misdirect. It got me a little bit.
It was just funny reading the fights that Noelle would get into with Cal, just like how they would like just destroy things and like toss one over the window. Like it, like I don't even remember like half the things that actually like happened between them, because it was just kind of in. it was just kind of like in flashbacks, but
yeah.
I just remember thinking like, wow, this couple is very overdramatic, and the fact that like Noelle goes on to these talk shows and kind of plays it up, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, she was I kind of wish we got more of her. And this is something that I noticed while finishing the book, is there was a noticeable lack of like strong female characters. And maybe part of it is just what Joe's, like the type of character that Joe is, the type of character the author is comfortable writing. But like altogether, the only real character with like a substantial role was Deronda and Noelle.
Yeah. And that cardboard cutout of Margaret Cho.
Oh, there was another Asian woman character, though. There was the hotel manager from Isaiah's first case as a detective.
Oh, right. Yeah.
She was like a Japanese-American like hotel manager.
We remember all of the Asians because just like watching award shows has like primed us for just like, oh, my God, it's like there's an Asian person. Or when you're watching a show, you're like, oh, there's an Asian person. I didn't think that I would be doing it for this book by an Asian author. I mean, I say that sarcastically.
It's how the story. And well, I mean, you said yourself that the second book features an Asian gang. So I imagine there's a lot more Asian characters in the second book of the IQ series.
See, the thing is, you can write whatever you want. Just do your research and treat your characters like they're actual people. And I think you will be somewhat on the right track.
A lot of the industry reviewers gave this book a lot of props for, like, for the setting itself. Because you don't see a lot of, like, you see a lot of crime fiction from, like, the hood. But you don't see a lot of, like, this type of detective fiction, right? In terms of like, right, you think of like the great detectives in like literary canon. You have your Sherlocks, you have your Poirots, but you don't really see like, there hasn't been a character like Isaiah Quintabe. Although I think the series got optioned as a TV series. So
yes, it did. It actually got optioned as a TV series before it actually got sold as a book.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I guess if you're background a screenwriter, you probably know people who can make that happen.
No, that is not how it happened.
Really?
What happened is, Joe Ide, he wrote this book and he had no connections to anyone in the publishing industry except for his cousin who, you know, who happened to write like several nonfiction books, I think. I'm not sure, but his cousin was from a higher educational background and he had hit up his cousin and said, hey, I wrote a book. Will you read it? And he just kind of expected his cousin to just blow him off and not really respond back to him. But then his cousin responded back to him like pretty quickly and said, oh my gosh, your book was really good. Let me get you in touch with my agent. And then the agent read it and the agent was like, please let me sell your book. And then she sold it to, she sold the TV rights first.
Wow.
Because it was like more, I guess it was like more appealing as like a television adaptation. Usually those things get like optioned before the book even gets published.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, like, there are so many Sherlock adaptations in TV and in movies and, of course, like, in books. But I guess, like, television-wise, there really isn't that many detective stories about a quote-unquote detective who isn't properly trained, isn't from a family that comes from money and is solving crimes because they need the money. I mean, Isaiah does it for like, because of like moral reasons, because he feels guilt and he feels like he has to atone for something. But he takes the
Cal case because he needs the money.
Yeah. And he also charged someone money for one case because he was like, that guy looks like he has money and he seems like a jerk. So he could probably pay me. You don't really see characters like that.
I was trying to figure out his like gauge, right? Like, are you charging this guy just because he's a jerk?
I think it was a mixture of both. It's just like, okay, he's a jerk, and also he has money. I can milk him for all he is worth, or at least like an amount that he would be willing to part with. That was one thing that I noticed about like Isaiah that I was like, I was just like, ooh, bad negotiation skills. But maybe I'm a bad negotiator because maybe I came in too early. But because he's very firm.
There's also that scene where Bobby Grimes tries to pay him $20,000 to just let it go, and he refuses because his loyalty is to his client. So he has principles too. It's principled, I guess.
Principles don't get you paid.
I can just imagine the TV series is about him balancing his need to live with his need to, help people.
Yeah.
I guess final thoughts. Do you think you'll be picking up the next two books?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really curious as to what this Chinese gang in Las Vegas will entail in a case. Mm-hmm. Also, I want to know if I'm correct in my prediction that Marcus was murdered and not killed in an accidental hit and run. So yeah, I think I will pick up the rest.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed reading/listening to this story too. It was like a really, really fun read.
Yeah, I think it was. It was nice to go from Dear America to IQ. I don't know why, but it just seemed like a very easy transition from one book to the other. Maybe it's because both relatively breezy reads, but...
I mean, it was a breezy read, but it also it is about privilege, the lack thereof. This is set in the world from the perspective of people who don't have anything. And I thought that was a cool way to establish a detective-style character.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that we read a crime fiction novel by an Asian-American author. Because the last one that we read, I guess What Lies Between Us isn't a crime fiction novel, but... yeah, I don't think we read any crime fiction novels by actual Americans. Because Keigo Higashino is Japanese and his work was translated. I guess the genre of crime fiction is so broad that it can really go either way.
I mean, it's also a subgenre of crime fiction about genius detectives, right? Yes. Because Keigo Higashino's, that one was about... Galileo, right?
Yeah.
Who is a scientist detective.
Yes.
So yeah, I guess that'll do it for our discussion of IQ by Joe Ide, the birth of a new fancy detective in literary canon. I'm interested to see where this character goes. If it does get turned into a TV show, if he becomes just as popular as the other great detectives.
Probably.
Who knows?
I don't know. Never know.
So, Rira, what are we reading for in the month of December?
We are reading Gabrielle Zevin's Young Jane Young. And I am 50% of the way through it. And it is wonderful. It is so good. I did not expect to read that fast in a number of hours, but it's really enjoyable. It really highlights the ugly patriarchal side of politics, and it's really timely considering the Me Too movement that that's been happening for a couple of years now, and the writing is very witty, and it's just a really great book so far. So I'm excited for everyone to read it, and then I can talk about it. And hopefully when I'm not on cough medicine. Hopefully when I am not, half delirious.
Before we go, we did get some nice emails from some of our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in and letting us know that you enjoy what we do. It's always great to hear from you.
So we got an email from Stephen Hong Son, and he wrote, Just wanted to reach out and say I really enjoy your podcasts. I teach and publish scholarly criticism with the field of Asian American lit. And then he sent us a bunch of links to Asian American literature stuff. That did not sound very scholarly on my part, but
it's all right.
But it's like, that's really cool. We are not experts in literature. Neither of us have literature degrees. And no. It's really nice that we're getting a thumbs up from someone who does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our next shout out is to KH. They wrote that they're a new listener to the podcast and they love it a lot. This part is a criticism to Marvin. They wrote, however, I'm listening to episode 30 and I noticed that Marvin interrupts Rira a lot. Please let her talk more. There's two hosts, so there should be equal airtime for both hosts. This is probably not an issue anymore, but I had to say something because it's getting annoying. Anyway, please keep doing what you're doing. I can't wait to finish my novels and hear what you guys think. Thank you. And they also recommended a bunch of books by Asian and Asian American authors, including Paper Menagerie by Ken Liu, J.Y. Yang's novels, Julie C. Dow's Force of a Thousand Lanterns, and etc.
Noted.
I don't think Marvin interrupts me. I think I think it's just like a mic thing, right? Most of the time.
It might be how I edit things because I tend to cut it so that it sounds like we're like talking over each other or like talking.
It's just it could be that. And also like I have a really weird cadence when I talk. I slow down and I kind of trail off at the end of my sentences. So it can seem like he's interrupting me, but he's not. Like, I'm just letting him end my thought and just pick it up where I'm leaving it off most of the time. I'm not a very articulate person. I really shouldn't be a podcast host.
No, you're fine.
I'm doing fine, though.
You're perfectly fine. It helps that, you know, we talk about interesting things and interesting books. And, I mean, this podcast wouldn't exist if Rira hadn't told me that she wanted to start a book club. So.
Yay. And our final shout out is from iTunes. Our Son 2002 wrote, Asian American teen who love podcasts, books, and learning. Keep up the good work.
Nice.
Thank you for leaving a review and rating. I greatly appreciate it.
I'm so happy. We don't really get that many reviews these days, so new ones are always welcome. And thanks to everyone writing in. For those of you new to the podcasts, please, please, please join our Goodreads groups. That way you can also put in your... that way you can participate in our discussions of our monthly book club picks, either by adding to discussions of past books or upcoming books. We always, Rira puts up a thread for each upcoming book. And if you do post your thoughts before we record a discussion, we will read them and discuss your points as well. So it's a fun way to get involved with the podcast. And we always love having, just because Rira and I are just, you know, we are two people. And sometimes we don't cover all the perspectives. So it's always great to have more people sharing their thoughts. We also got featured on a list of literary podcasts not hosted by White Dude Bros by Electric Lit. And that was really cool. I'm excited that I'm not included in the list of Dude Bros. It's very, very important.
Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you. Thanks to our contributor friend Lily Rugo for pointing that out to us.
Yes. I wonder how she even stumbled across that. Like,
I don't know.
We don't even have Google Alert for us. So, I mean, that's probably something we should do.
Probably. On that note, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you, Rira, for Skyping in and making it happen while I'm abroad in China.
Thank you for the beautiful Instagram photos that you've been posting and making me making me have mad FOMO. And and thank you for editing this podcast. Hopefully by the time it airs, it's it resembles a conversation, because there were a lot of technical difficulties and a lot of
they don't need to know that.
Yeah, they don't need to know.
Everything was perfect.
Behind the scenes. Everything was okay.
Everything was great.
What you're listening to right now is exactly how we talked in real life.
I want to give a quick shout out to the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts that we're part of. It's a great group of podcasts that you should check out, including shows like They Call Us Bruce, The Clubcast, Fresh Creatives, the Korean Drama Podcast, and Saturday School. You can find all of those great programs by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. And yeah, don't forget to check out our website, booksandboba.com. And again, join the aforementioned Goodreads group.
All right.
Yeah.
That's it.
On that note, yeah, we'll call it a podcast. Thanks again, Reba, and I'll see you later.
All right, keep reading.
Hey, I'm Phil Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America, from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We've got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation.
The good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallsbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.